Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the season opener against the Seattle Seahawks is one day closer. And when you take a look at this Packers 53-man roster heading into week one, which a 53-man roster we believe is set for now, no more, probably not any more last-minute changes before the first game. But you and I were counting it up before we went on the air. There are 19 players on this 53-man roster who are in their fifth year or later in terms of experience in their NFL careers. This is one of the most experienced rosters the Packers have started a season with, maybe the most experienced in the Mike McCarthy, Ted Thompson era. And Aaron Rodgers talked about that on Wednesday in his media session, how there is a different feel to this group because of all of the veterans who are around and with the influx of veterans from outside the organization as well.
Yeah, and I think his first initial reaction, his quote when he was asked about it, was, you know, the more the merrier. I mean, he's all for it. You know, he's at a point in career now, 13 years in, 33 years old, to have a guy like Jari Evans there who's, you know, kind of been, you know, through that those battles over the years and understands what it's like to win a Super Bowl. That's valuable experience. And I think, you know, the past few years, you know, there have been guys who have come in. You've seen Julius Peppers. You saw LaTroy Guyon in 2013. You know, guys that had been around the league. But to have this influx of talent at so many different positions, you can make the case that a lot of it was in reaction to the unrestricted free agents that they lost in March. But at the same time, I think it's also interesting to see the different perspectives they're bringing in now in different avenues that, you know, these young first, second, and third-year players can kind of get some tips from, some experience from, and really get a better feel, you know, for what the league looks like as a whole.
Yeah, the Packers definitely went about replacing a lot of those departed veteran free agents with some veterans. When you look at the way it shook out, T.J. Lang leaves, you bring in Jari Evans from New Orleans. LaTroy Guyon is gone, but Ricky Jean-Francois, now the new addition, Quentin Dial, both coming over to help on the defensive line. Devon House is brought back after he's gone for a couple of years. He comes in as the most seasoned veteran in the cornerback group, with Sam Shields not coming back following his concussion last year. So that's a little bit of a change in the process, in that not so many of the departed players or the departed roles are just being taken over by young guys. That being said, the Packers aren't getting completely away from still building from the ground up, because you have Kevin King and Josh Jones, your first two draft picks, are going to play a significant amount on defense this year. You hope the same for Montrevious Adams and Vince Beagle, your next two draft picks, also on defense when they get healthy and are ready to go. So it's a mixture of, in terms of the way this team was built this year, and it does look different, and I guess we'll see what the results are going
to
be.
The thing that probably stands out to me more than anything when you look at the depth chart position for position is you do have young talent, as you just illustrated, but seeing the veteran leadership basically in every room now, and then the Packers have some of their own, you know, well, you know, developed, you know, Mike Daniels with the defensive linemen. You look at, you know, Jordy Nelson leading the receivers with Randall Cobb. But at the same time, I think seeing a guy like Devon House come back into this system, who was around during the time of Tremont Williams and Charles Woodson, and understanding, you know, what that defense was like with the experience that they had at one point, as opposed to now with, you know, trending a little bit more towards the younger side, that's a valuable thing to have. And the other thing is, too, that you have to keep in mind, especially when you see a guy like Quentin Dial come into this system, they don't always necessarily have to be, you know, starters, that this is the guy that, okay, well, this is the number one guy.
Yeah.
It sometimes can be just having another rotational player, veteran, in that group to kind of go through those motions with the younger players on this roster and kind of help lead them, you know, through some of those early, you know, learning curves that a lot of them are going
to
face.
Yeah, Francois is another guy like that as well. He wasn't necessarily brought in to be a starter, but he's a veteran player who's going to have his role both on the field and in the locker room. And Aaron Rodgers talked about that in terms of the new veterans coming in and where they can, you know, have moments to find, I guess, opportunities to show leadership in the locker room. And there are players like Martellus Bennett, you know, sometimes seizing those opportunities. At the same time, Aaron Rodgers said, hey, you know, I have conversations with Francois, with Jari Evans, yeah, about the locker room cultures that they came from, successful ones, Francois in San Francisco, Evans in New Orleans. What elements of culture did they experience that maybe the Packers are missing? You know, Rodgers talked about, hey, there's no need to just be stagnant with the culture around here. Even though it's been successful, it doesn't mean you can't change some things and still move forward.
Well, you have to fight that complacency factor. And he mentioned when you have that much homegrown talent, there can be an insulation factor to it and not being exposed to different thoughts and ideas from the outside. You know, the other 31 teams in the NFL, those veterans kind of bring that. The other thing I thought was interesting, too, that you touched on in your story on Packers.com is a guy like Evans now, 12 years in, but even for him, there's something new to learn, getting used to Aaron Rodgers and his cadence, yeah, and his pace. Those are all things that they got a small taste of it during the preseason, but now going into this game against the Seahawks, really, this is where you're going to start to forge that chemistry.
Yeah, this is where it all starts, and we'll talk more about week one coming up here, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. Wes, we touched on it in our last show. The storyline for the fans, very much so in this game, is the return of Eddie Lacy to Lambeau Field in a different uniform. Right. You talked to a couple of defensive players for the Packers in the locker room yesterday about in part about how different it will be just to see Eddie Lacy in a new uniform. And not only that, but now they have to tackle him as well.
Yeah, this is there's a lot of defenders now that we mentioned in the last segment, the homegrown veterans that the Packers have. A guy like Morgan Burnett, who's been around here for 7-8 years now, went up against Eddie Lacy for a number of years in practice.
Yeah.
And he said, when I was chatting with him a little bit on Wednesday, you know, it's interesting, you know, he'll open up his Instagram account, you know, and he sees that those photos of Eddie, you know, wearing those Seahawks colors, and it takes a minute to adjust, because it really, ultimately, you know, for so many years, you're used to seeing him on the other side of, you know, the ball and in practice, you know, 2-3 times a week, but on Sundays, he was on your side. So, you know, I was talking to Nick Perry about this as well, the Packers outside backer, who was a full participant in practice on Wednesday, a good sign for him and his ankle. But he mentioned, you know, it's really that type of running back, you can't let them get going, because he is big, he's powerful, and once he gets to that second level, then now it's incumbent on your safeties and your defensive backs and your linebackers to try to get him down in open space, and that isn't always the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. I mean, as we saw for 4 years here in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy, not only a powerful back, but he's got that spin move. He's got the quick feet to make guys miss, like a smaller back sometimes, yeah, is able to do. So, and we'll just have to see exactly what kind of workload Lacy will have come Sunday, because while Pete Carroll has told reporters in Seattle that Eddie Lacy's ready for 20-25 carries if that's what they ask him to do, Thomas Rawls is coming back from the ankle injury. He is back at practice for the Seahawks, but he's missed quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
So exactly how those carries are going to be divided up, if they'll be divided, is one of those wait-and-see elements for Sunday. But you have a feeling that that Eddie Lacy maybe is going to be the number one guy for this game, and I would imagine Lacy's going to be pretty fired up.
Yeah, definitely, because even if Rawls does play, and he was a full participant in practice, you know, with that ankle injury that he's been nursing for the better part of a month now,
yeah,
you would think that Lacy's still going to probably be the guy that they're going to be turning to a lot. And he mentioned it right from the get-go. I mean, it's only natural when you leave a team and you have your first encounter with them as a visitor, you do want to, you know, show yourself well. You want to show that, you know, you're still the back that everybody thought he was, you know, when he injured his ankle last season. But from the Packers' perspective, it's going to be a big test for them with their run defense. They did finish 8th last year in the league. I think that was one thing with all the issues that they had with the cornerbacks and staying healthy last year. Packers are pretty darn good, particularly in that first 2 months of the season against the run. So to get off to that kind of fast start again, they see Lacy, they could see Rawls. You have, you know, Devontae Freeman the week after. I mean, there's a lot of talented guys that you're going to have to be ready for.
Yeah, I really thought last year during the regular season there were only 3 games that stood out in my mind where the Packers' run defense struggled. The Dallas Cowboys game, Ezekiel Elliott, he obviously did that to a lot of people. And with the Cowboys basically being in the lead that entire game, game, they were able to feed Elliott as much as they wanted to, particularly in the fourth quarter. And then during the four-game losing streak, the Tennessee and the Washington losses, I thought the Packers really struggled against the run. But other than those three games, you know, where there were some real hiccups with the run defense, I thought the run defense was pretty solid for the better part of the year. And certainly in the rematch with the Cowboys in the playoffs, the Packers got the lead. It affected a little bit, you know, the workload of Ezekiel Elliott there. So it all kind of works together. It fits together, and obviously, much like the Packers did last year against the Seahawks, they love to be able to take the lead and play from ahead, as opposed to having to worry about that 250-pound back coming at you play after play after play.
Yeah, because I mean, again, and you and I have discussed this, you know, in our pre-production meetings, you had the situation with Lacy. We've seen it so many times over the years with him that he was the kind of back that you want to get him going early because you want to have him running and really wearing down that defense in the second half.
Right.
That's where he really thrives, especially any of those kind of power backs in the league. So to be able to set that tone is going to be important. And I think this is a hungry group too. I mean, they return, for the most part, the major contributors from that run defense a year ago. You have all three inside backers back. You have Matthews and Perry, Morgan Burnett. And then that defensive line with Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry. For as many moves as they made and the changes that they made with bringing in veterans, that's really the home base for the Packers. That's where they want to be able to get the most bang for their buck, so to speak, is with those guys, those second-year defensive linemen getting in the mix with Daniels. So it's going to be a great test. And as everybody said, there's that bowling ball type effect with Lacy. You know, once he gets moving, once he gets going, it's more difficult to take him down. So the Packers are, as I said, are going to want to set the tone early.
Yeah, there's no question about it. With that, though, I'm going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, another storyline that has developed for this game, Packers-Seahawks on Sunday afternoon at Lambeau Field, and it's an unfortunate one. And I'm talking about the incident involving Michael Bennett, the Seahawks defensive lineman, and the Las Vegas police a couple of weeks ago following the big Mayweather-McGregor fight. Now Michael Bennett, the older brother of new Packers tight end Martellus Bennett, and Michael Bennett was stopped by police, forced to the ground, put in handcuffs. Another officer was holding a gun on him. We don't know maybe exactly all what happened there. Michael Bennett has his side of the story. The Las Vegas police have their side of the story. But the bottom line is a very harrowing incident nonetheless. And Martellus Bennett addressed it in the locker room with the Green Bay media on Wednesday, and just a scary situation, something that he's had to deal with emotionally. He's been trying to help his brother through it over the last couple of weeks. They've been talking on the phone. They'll get to see each other for the first time on Sunday afternoon since the incident at Lambeau Field, and just unfortunate that all this happened. But Martellus Bennett certainly not sparing his thoughts and emotions when it comes to what's going on here.
No, and as you've said before, I think one of the most endearing things about Marty Bennett is that, you know, he does have that stream of consciousness. I mean, he wears his heart and his emotions on his sleeve, and this was tough, you know, listening to him in the locker room, because I'm trying to think during my years on the beat, I can't think of anything that was as personal in terms of a topic that came up.
Yeah.
And the most difficult thing is, I mean, take away everything else, just from a humanistic standpoint. I don't have any brothers or sisters. I'm an only child. But the image of, you know, a loved one being in that situation, a video, you know, Bennett even said when he saw it, he had to excuse himself from one of his team meetings because there was just so much emotion, kind of was overcome by it. And the biggest thing for him is the what if factor. And
yeah,
not really, you know, as he said, it could have been 2 seconds this way, 2 seconds that way, and how things could be different. So he was asked, you know, if there's just a certain part of him. He hasn't seen Michael since then. I mean, these are two guys, both grown adults living their lives with families. You know, he FaceTimes with them 3 or 4 times a week.
Right.
He talks on the phone with them constantly. But this Sunday's game will actually be the first time he's going to see him since the incident. So there is just a part of him that just wants to give his brother a hug and, you know, be able to see him, because, as he said, there is a reality that there was a chance that he might not have.
Yeah,
able to.
Yeah, and as he said, sometimes a hug is the best thing you can do. And as you said, they've been FaceTiming, they've been talking on the phone, but for the two brothers to actually, you know, finally be together, whether they get together for dinner on Saturday night, you know, maybe there'll be time for that, maybe not. Martellus wasn't quite sure. But on the field on Sunday, and we know, you know, Michael Bennett has been one of the more outspoken players. He's been one of the players kneeling during the national anthem during the preseason games. He said before the Las Vegas incident that was going to continue in the regular season. So there'll be a lot of attention on what goes on during the national anthem on Sunday. And for me, you know, I'm not going to get too caught up in all that, and I certainly don't want our show necessarily to get caught up in that. But it's you know, standing just a few feet away from Martellus Bennett and seeing him trying to process these emotions, mm-hmm. in what his brother was going through, it makes it all very real. No matter what side of the political fence that you're on, this is a tough deal. It's just a tough deal.
Yeah, and as I said, I mean, just we're all human beings. We're all in this, you know, this thing together.
Yeah.
So to go through that, I can't imagine, you know, what was going through his mind. You got to remember, the Packers that night of the Mayweather-McGregor fight were playing the Denver Broncos. They were finishing the game. I remember they had the fight playing in the visiting team locker room. So within hours of that, you know, the Packers making that trip back, that's when Marty finds out, you know, all this stuff happened, and he was very supportive of his brother. He said in the past, you know, the kneeling, standing thing, that isn't quite the way he does things, but he vehemently supports his brother and you know, loves him, cherishes him, and was behind him in the letter that he wrote. He said it was very eloquent on social media to kind of get this message out, and it's something that Bennett is happy is out there.
Yeah, and it'll be nice. I think it'll be a good moment whenever it happens, if it's before the game, if it's after the game, no matter who wins or loses. I think it'll be a nice moment to see those two, you know, be able to give each other the old brotherly hug, yeah. and hopefully get on with their lives in as normal a way as possible. But with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, A former Packer announced his retirement this past week, and that's receiver James Jones. Actually ended up having two stints in Green Bay. Was originally a third-round draft pick out of San Jose State, if I recall correctly, in 2007. And then was with the Packers from 2007 through 2013. Left for a year to go play for the Oakland Raiders. And then in 2015, when Jordy Nelson was injured, Jones ended up getting released, I believe it was by the Giants.
Yes.
And then the Packers picked him up, and he had one last, a very successful season with the Packers in 2015. And, you know, you talk to any of the guys, whether they're receivers or any of James Jones's former teammates, and he's a guy that they loved having around. And one of the first things they say about him is just what a family man that he is, and that's something that will obviously continue on here as his kids grow up.
Yeah, you could do a whole show on, you know, trying to sum up James Jones's career, you know, on the field, off the field. Jordy Nelson said he's probably one of the biggest kids he's ever been around during his time, which is one of the reasons why he thinks he associates as well as he does with them. But even, you know, the thing is the ties that bind everybody. He played a number of years with Jordy Nelson, Aaron Rodgers, Randall Cobb. But it just so happens he also had a connection to Devontae Adams before Adams was ever in Green Bay.
Right.
Just from their connection in Southern California. So he had a major impact not only on this organization, but even some of the guys that later came into the organization. And the thing that's interesting, too, is he always found a way to really brand himself, you know, in a unique way. He had, for a number of years, the turtleneck. I don't know how many you know, receivers were rocking the turtleneck. Then he busted out the hoodie in 2015.
Yeah.
Ended up, the NFL had to basically change the rule book so they couldn't have anything obstructing the nameplate. And then on top of everything was just such a reliable receiver. When Aaron Rodgers talks about building chemistry and trust and everything, you know, James Jones was the embodiment of that.
Yeah, that was one of the things that stood out to me. You know, Jones played the 1 year with Brett Favre in 2007 as a rookie. And I think one of the best plays of his career, which was overshadowed from later in the same game, but he had a 79-yard touchdown catch on Monday Night Football against the Denver Broncos. A huge play for a rookie. I think it might even have been his first NFL touchdown, first or second. But then Greg Jennings catches the overtime touchdown, the 80-yarder. So a lot of people forgot about JJ's there. But in his years with Aaron Rodgers, I think what stood out to me is that as Rodgers got more and more adept at getting those free plays from, you know, the offsides or the 12 men on the field, JJ was a guy he looked to a lot because he really trusted him. If it was a one-on-one matchup, he'd throw it out there and let him go get it on one of those free plays, and James Jones came through for him a lot.
He did. I mean, that's the thing. When I go back and look at his career, specifically that last season, the eighth season with the Packers, the fact that he, as you mentioned, got cut by the Giants in final cuts, comes back the next week with the Packers, and then not only plays basically every snap against the Bears in the opener, ends up having a really big game for them.
Yeah.
And when the Packers were rolling with those free plays, James Jones ended up being the one on a lot of the receiving end of a lot of those targets.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we talked about how Jones has been so good with the media, you know, throughout his time in Green Bay. My favorite line that he liked to pull out a lot is when he would get asked, you know, well, why didn't this work, or why couldn't you guys do this, or what went wrong here? He would just look the reporter in the eye and say, you know, the other guys get paid too.
That was the big line.
and it's one I've always remembered. You have to remember that. All these guys are professionals. It's a tough league. It's a tough place to win.
The other thing I always respected about him too, stood in front of the media every single time, win, lose, draw, whatever. He was always accountable for what happened on the field.
Yeah, no question about it. But we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.